Okay. Hi, my name is Mary G. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Arizona. And it's very nice to be back at this meeting. I used to come, oh, I don't know, several years ago, I think it is. But the time changes and everything just didn't work for me anymore. So it's lovely to be back. Thank you, Colleen, for asking me to speak. I realized on March 28th, I had been in OA for 35 years when I walked through the door the first time. And I realized that I'm 71. And so I've been in OA a little bit, about half of my life. And, I wish I could have had a story that I could say, wow, I walked in the doors, I got it immediately, and I've been abstinent ever since. Unfortunately, that is not my experience. And actually, it's not unfortunate because I had a lot to learn. I had to really, I had to learn that OA wasn't here to teach me how to be a normal eater. But I'm going to go back a little bit to begin with. I'm the oldest of four children, four girls, and my father was in the Air Force, so we moved a lot. We moved from, one place to the other whenever he was transferred. And while I don't know if I was born with this disease, I know that I, at a very young age, sugar was always very, very appealing and very exciting to me. And the first time I realized that there was something different about the way that I ate sugar and others ate sugar was my father was in a popcorn. Is it? It's okay to talk about food here, right? Is that correct? Oh, it is. Okay, great. He was in a popcorn ball business. And so I remember he gave my sisters and I, who are 2 and 3 years younger than I am, a popcorn ball. And I ate the whole thing. I mean, I just thought that was great. And I said, Dad, can I have another one? And he goes, Mary, he goes, you'll be sick. I was probably about 7 years old. And I said, no, I won't be sick. I promise I won't. And he's like, I don't think you can do it. I said, yes, I can. And so he gave me another one. And before my sisters were done with their first one, I had finished my second one. And I thought, there's no way I can ask him for a third one. I'm sure he wouldn't give it to me, but I wanted one. And so that's the first time I remember, really having a different effect because I think my sisters didn't even finish theirs. They just kind of got tired of it and just put it down. When I first started to gain weight was when I was 11 years old. And my father had been transferred to another Air Force base, and I had to say goodbye for the first time to people that I had grown close to, friends. And in my family, it wasn't actually said, but it was very much implied that you just don't talk about your feelings, especially feeling sad, because that would make my dad feel sad, and I didn't want to do that. I really was very close to my father, and I didn't want to, cause him any pain. But at the same time, I didn't know what to do with these feelings. And so this began a lifelong journey of stuffing my feelings down or escaping from them, escaping from reality. And I don't remember at that time how I got the food, the extra food, but I know in the 2 week trip that we had from Albuquerque to Bedford, Massachusetts, I had gained like almost 20 pounds, and I was pretty tall for my age, but still, an 11 year old I think I was about 118 pounds at that time. That was pretty excessive. I probably went past that weight and never saw it again. So my compulsive overeating career just continued on. I can remember coming home from school and, fixing a half a cup of rice and eating it quickly before my mother got home, and then eating dinner on top of it. And, just the amount of food, the volume of food was comforting to me. It was like it helped me feel better about life because I wasn't feeling. Here I thought I felt so much, and really I felt nothing. So fast forward, I became a teenager, and being the new kid in school was always a difficult experience for me. always felt like I was different. They either had a different accent or a different way that they looked or talked. I was teased quite a bit, bullied, but I was also a lot bigger than any of the boys in my class, and so my response to that was to beat them up, which was not a really great experience for, having boys like you afterwards. And so I had an aggressive streak and a rebellious streak. I had a difficult relationship with my mother always, and she was very thin. She smoked, and I looked nothing like her, really. I looked more like my dad and took after his side of the family. And so, being the oldest, she kind of expected me to be the good example, to show my younger sisters what they should do or whatnot. And I didn't want any part of it. When she used to say to me, "Well, you're the oldest. You should be the shining example." And I said, "I didn't ask to be first. It's not my fault that I was born first. I said, "You should have had my sister Teresa first." And I used to call her Miss Goody Two Shoes. I was like, "Oh my gosh, she's at it again." So my nature was rebellious. My nature was argumentative. My nature was, very aggressive towards other, and yet underneath it all, I was a very insecure person, and I didn't like myself. I really did not like myself at all. I thought there was something wrong with me. It was like, why can't I be a normal person? And so those kind of feelings were the feelings that, fueled my compulsive eating throughout my life. When I was 20 years old, was all my friends were getting married that year, and so I thought, well, I just didn't know what I was supposed to be doing in my life, and so I was praying about it, and I happened to be on a retreat in a convent, and I got this brilliant idea that I should be a nun. And yeah, if you ever wanted to meet a person less likely to be a nun, it was me. But I thought, this is great, because I really believed that no one could love me. And so I jumped on it. I, found a community that accepted me without waiting, which, was an amazing, because the first couple of communities that I was in touch with, their response to me was, "Well, why don't we wait about it and you can discern it?" Well, self-will run riot in an addict is not something that, I was willing to do. I wasn't going to wait. I was going to do it right then and there. And so, I had a lot of structure then because of being in the convent. So my eating career, as I would call it, didn't really get to a really high point. My top weight was 222. And at 222, I would go, "Oh my gosh, I'm at 222. If I don't lose weight, I'm going to be, in trouble." Because I just was convinced that I could go to 333 or 444 or whatever the next number was, that was going to be, this point. And in 1889, I got into OA, and I was still in the convent. And I remember coming in and, sitting in the parking lot eating my favorite candy. It was 2 days after Easter. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to eat this again. And while that might have been true for some people, it certainly was not true for me. I ended up eating that favorite candy again several times because I didn't understand, what my problem was. I thought my problem was just that I was fat. I thought I had no willpower. I thought I couldn't really do this. And so, I remember going into OA, and there were about 40 people in the meeting at the time, and it was a speaker meeting, and I was just blown away. I felt at home immediately. It was like I knew this is where I belonged. I never had met people who did what I did with food, who couldn't eat just one cookie or who couldn't stop, even though they wanted to desperately to stop. They just couldn't. And so I remember, asking somebody to give me my sponsor, and she gave me the food plan of basically 3 meals a day, no sugar. And so, as sugar is my heroin, I did pretty well on that food plan. Unfortunately, it was only a food plan, and I didn't really do much more than go to this one meeting a week, and of course, didn't deal with any of my resentments, fears, dishonesties, selfishness, nothing. None of that came up during my first years in OA. And so, of course, going to my family again, which is always a slippery slope for me, I picked up again at my sister's, and was told it's just a very light dessert. It won't bother you at all, right? And I thought, well, that's probably true. It's very light, yeah, but it's only full of sugar, right? So, I was off and running again, and this was a pattern in my life. I would be up 50 pounds, down 50 pounds, up 50 pounds, down 50 pounds. And so, finally, when I was 36, a woman who was a facilitator at our community said to me, I really think you have a problem with food. I remember being so insulted. I thought, how dare she say that to me? Like, as if she couldn't see me going up and down, constantly in a different size. But I took to heart what she said, because she was talking about Overeaters Anonymous, and she said, it's based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, well, I'm not an alcoholic, so that really doesn't bother me. But I just, I didn't really know anything about it. So I looked it up a bit, and I found out it was free. So that was really the reason I went, was I didn't want to spend any money on it. And, like I said, I started out, trying to be abstinent, but it just didn't work. And so my journey in OA is my first 17 years, was basically a chronic relapse, because I didn't understand that, I had to change, first of all. I thought that if OA would just simply teach me how to be a normal eater, I would be fine, and then I would leave. Unfortunately, that's not what OA does. OA presents me with a spiritual toolkit of the 12 steps. And of course, being in the convent, I thought I was spiritual. I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew what a spiritual ex awakening was. Of course, I didn't. But I came in extremely spiritually arrogant, and I thought, you know what? I know who God is, right? I know my relationship with Him. This is going to be easy, because I would hear that the program was simple, and so in my mind, I thought, well, okay, simple means e easy, right? It equal it's easy. No, that is not what simple means. Simple means simple, and it is not an easy program. So fast forward, because I entered the convent because I was fat, I realized after 28 years that I was in, or well, actually 25 years, I was in the wrong place, and spent a year or two, discerning whether or not I should leave the convent. One of my biggest fears was financial insecurity, and I just thought, well, I kept hearing the message, I'm laying before you life or death, choose life. And I did. I left the convent, and 3 years later, I met my husband, and we got married 2 years later after that. And he married me when I was heavy. I weighed more than he did at our wedding. But the thing was, is that 6 months, well, 2 months after we got married, my mother died. And so that meant I was my father's caregiver, or which I didn't think he really needed one. I thought he was my mother's caregiver. It turns out that my father had some major depression issues, and I had no clue, because every time my mother told me something about it, I would just ignore her. I thought, well, yeah, you're probably bugging him or whatever. So anyway, I came into a way of doing OA, which was very structured, very disciplined. It showed me, it gave me a food plan, it told me what to do, and at first I thought, there's no way that I can do this. It was weighed and measured, but I saw people who had lost, over 100 pounds, and looked normal and happy, and they were talking about how this program worked, and so I tried it. And lo and behold, not only did I lose 50 pounds, I lost 80 pounds, and I had no clue that that was my normal body weight. I'd never been at that weight since the first time I passed it. So I did well in that program. I had an 11 and a half year extent of abstinence. But the thing that program
Gentle
really
reminder.
emphasized, thank you, emphasized was the tools and the the tools and the meetings and all the phone calls, everything in the tools. And so I did that. But what happened in 2015 was I was diagnosed with a chronic illness, and I really didn't feel well. So in 2017, I let go of the fellowship. I just didn't feel well. I didn't want to talk to anyone. And so, I didn't go to meetings because I thought, well, I'm in fit spiritual condition. I'm okay. I'm still going to church. Nothing's wrong with me. And little did I know that in the big book, it means fit spiritual condition means that I'm working extensively with others. Well, I wasn't. And so as a result, back to my family, my slippery slope, I picked up again. And it was abstinent food, but it was a behavior that I didn't do. And I heard a voice telling me, you don't eat like that. And I did it anyway. I kept eating. And it was perhaps the scariest experience I ever had of compulsive eating. I couldn't stop. I really just couldn't stop. And then I heard, like about 5 minutes later, a megaphone voice going, "What are you doing?" And I walked away. I stayed with the same sponsor at that time, and I really loved this woman. She taught me a lot, but she would say to me, "Just don't pick up that first compulsive bite. Whatever you do, just don't eat it." And I would think, well, I wish I could do that. I wish I could just not eat that first compulsive bite. But I kind of had this sense like I needed to do something different. I needed to have a different experience. And so when I broke my abstinence in 2022, and again, I call it breaks, but it's really a relapse because my relapse starts way before I pick up the food. I pick up the food last. The food is always the last thing to go. What happened to me was I had been in a normal body size for 18 years, and I'm thinking, you know what? I think probably by now I'm normal. And so I was trying to see what I could get away with. Now, this is another major thing. What can I do that, is a little bit off the plan, just a little bit. And sure enough, I ended up eating outside of a food time, another boundary that I don't do. And I broke my abstinence. So I got a big book sponsor, and she took me through the big book, working the steps. And at step five, I really had a spiritual awakening. Because when I took that hour, the first time I'd ever taken the whole hour at step five, I looked at the foundation of my program, and I realized there were a lot of cracks in my cement. I really had a faulty foundation. Because I still had that delusion, that belief that one day I was going to be a normal eater. I had not conceded to my innermost self, as it says on page 30, that indeed I was this compulsive eater. And so I worked the steps with her, and she actually taught me how to be God reliant. Now, you would have thought, with all of my experience, that I would have known how to do this, but I did not. I was either food plan reliant, sponsor reliant, you name it reliant, not God. I did not go to God. And so I would come to her and I'd say, this is what's happening. What do you think? And she'd go, I don't know. She goes, well, have you talked to God about it? Have you prayed about it? And I'm like, oh, no, I haven't yet. So I'm still learning this. I'm still practicing this in my daily life so that I don't forget where I get my power from. When I teach the big book to people and take them through the steps, my first point is that they don't have the power. I'm powerless over this. So I need to develop a connection to my higher power. I need to find out who that power is to me so that I can come
1 minute
into that.
reminder.
Thank you. And so to me, the connection to my step one is my connection to my higher power. And I need to remember to do that throughout the day. However, I still struggle with feelings. I still minimize my feelings. I tend to not do 10 steps as often as I should simply because I go, oh, it's not that important. And whereas then things build up, and then all of a sudden it's like I find myself in front of the refrigerator. So I am a true compulsive overeater, and with that, I'm going to pass. And thank you so much for asking me to share.